This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, 60 minutes of old-time radio crime stories for you every Wednesday from RelicRadio.com. We begin this week with Barry Craig, confidential investigator, in Kitchens Come with Knives from September 22nd, 1953. Hopefully that's more intriguing than the title is. After that, it's Calling All Cars and Murder in Room 9, their story from November 5th, 1936.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Murderers may have their difficulties, but they do have one advantage over the rest of us. Their work may be killing, but it's not they who get killed.
Coleman, America's leader in modern automatic home heating equipment, and the National Broadcasting Company present William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator. But before we bring you tonight's story, a word from Coleman, America's leader in modern automatic home heating equipment.
Hey, Pop, what are you doing?
Setting the clock, boy.
What for, Pop?
Getting up early tomorrow. Gotta go get us a Coleman heater while the big bonus sale is on.
Yes, now's the time to plan ahead for a warm house all winter. Buy your Coleman heater during Coleman's bonus sale. You get three big bonuses.
A new low price.
Now you can get a Coleman oil or gas heater at a new low price.
A new low operating cost.
You'll save up to 25% on heating bills because Coleman has exclusive fuel air control. Gives you maximum heat from the fuel you use.
And a 32-piece set of Libby Safe Edge glassware worth $14 in any store, free with your Coleman oil or gas heater.
Get these three big bonuses during Coleman's big bonus sale. This offer is for a short time only, so see your Coleman dealer tomorrow. Look for his name in your telephone directory.
Remember, comfort costs so little with a Coleman.
Barry Craig speaking. I suppose the classic position in which confidential investigators are generally supposed to be found is lurking in a doorway. I was in such a position this particular evening, but I wasn't enjoying it. For one thing, the doorway was drafty. For another, it was raining outside. And for a third, if that's necessary, I hadn't liked the assignment in the first place. All I had to do was wait in a doorway until a man named Sam Jenkins made an appearance, then go home. The next morning, I type up a report to the effect that Sam Jenkins was seen leaving 1012 East 43rd Street at 11:01 p.m. the previous night, and mail it to his business associates. Generally, there's a check in the return mail, all of which is fine, but not especially exciting. Except that sometimes it gets exciting anyway.
Am I blocking your view, mister?
That would depend on what I was looking at.
Let's say the house across the street.
It's a large house.
I'm a large man.
I've noticed that.
Well, then why not take a walk down the street?
I like it here.
Look, mister, why don't you go find yourself a keyhole to peep through and save yourself some trouble?
Maybe I like trouble. You figuring on making some for me?
Okay. I think I'm going to enjoy this.
Enjoy what? Slugs in your stomach? The gun's loaded. I've got a license for it, and I'd be delighted to explain the whole thing to the police. It's your move.
You feel pretty brave standing there behind a gun, don't you?
Not especially. I just happen to be working, and I don't like interruptions.
I'll get in touch with you some other time, wise guy.
Please do. Goodbye. The large gentleman moved down the street, turned the corner, and that was the end of it, for the time being. It was a pretty obvious effort to make me stop watching the house opposite, and Jenkins exit therefrom. It hadn't worked, though. At least at the time, I thought it hadn't. By the time a couple of hours had rolled by, I wasn't so sure. The rain had stopped and the night was getting old. Jenkins was still in the house opposite. He wasn't supposed to know I was following him and reporting to his associates. Up until the time I made my move across the street, I was pretty sure he hadn't known. That didn't explain why he was still in the house. I decided he might just as well find out about me.
Yes?
Oh, excuse me. I'm looking for a man named Sam Jenkins.
That sounds like a very dull thing to be looking for.
I'm a very dull type. Still in my own dull way, I'd like to speak to Mr. Jenkins.
Oh, don't misunderstand me. I've no objections to your speaking to Mr. Jenkins.
You're making it a little difficult for me to get at him without running over you.
That sounds as if you thought he was in my house.
He is.
You must have a very good reason for thinking so.
I have. The best of all possible reasons. I saw him go in 3¼ hours ago. The time was 9:43 exactly.
He must be a train announcer or something. I mean, who else keeps such careful track of the time?
Investigators do.
Oh, I see.
I don't have a search warrant, Miss...
My name is Lynn Walters.
Barry Craig's mine. Would you like to look at my credentials?
Oh, I don't really think so.
Okay. As I was saying, I don't have a search warrant, Miss Walters. If I were to force my way into your house, it would be illegal. The licensing board wouldn't pat me approvingly on the head.
Does that matter very much to you?
Matters a great deal. So I'm not going to force my way into your house. I'm going to figure that you're as bright as you look.
Why, thank you, Mr. Craig.
And that, therefore, you're going to ask me in.
Well, at least it's different.
What is?
Your approach. But it's terribly late. I'm alone in the house.
My offer to show you my credentials still holds.
I guess you can come in.
Thanks.
Now, are you going to ransack the house thoroughly, searching in every nook and cranny for, Sam Jenkins, I think you said?
I said Sam Jenkins. And, of course, I'm not going to search the house.
What?
That little routine at the front door could have given half a dozen Sam Jenkinses time to get out through the back door.
But I thought you said there was only one Sam Jenkins.
All right. Then he could have left 6 times.
Mr. Craig, you're losing your temper.
You could say that. Also, it happens to be true. Sure, I'm losing my temper. Partially because you're a fool.
I am?
I can testify on oath that Sam Jenkins entered this house tonight. The fact that I didn't see him leave isn't of any great importance. I would have preferred to include it in my report to my employer, however. That's the only reason I rang your doorbell. You stalled me and gave Jenkins a chance to get out the back way. I don't mind particularly.
Then why did you lose your temper?
Because I'm a sucker for pretty women. I like to think that their lives are as clean and as clear as their skin and eyes and hair.
A very pretty speech, Mr. Craig.
Yeah. And the funny part of it is I mean it. Good night, Miss Walters.
Wait. I never thought very highly of men in your particular profession, Mr. Craig.
That's okay. Neither have I.
But I suppose it can be an honest and decent job.
I try to make it so.
Suppose Sam Jenkins were here and you reported him. Would that be very bad?
For whom?
For Sam.
According to the story furnished me with my fee when I accepted the job, Sam Jenkins' partners suspected that he was releasing confidential information about the firm's operations, releasing them to people who would then be able to compete unfairly with the firm to which Jenkins belonged. According to further information given me, you were one of those people. Jenkins' associates wanted to be sure, however, that he was in contact with you before proceeding to take whatever steps they would then deem necessary. They can be sure now.
Suppose I told you that it wasn't quite that simple, Mr. Craig.
I'm afraid I wouldn't believe you.
Because you think I'm a liar?
Because I always believe a client until I'm forced to think otherwise.
I can force you to think otherwise, Mr. Craig, by telling you what's really behind all this.
That's up to you. I'm not asking.
I understand. Mr. Craig, Sam's partners are 2 men named Griffith and Swenson. Sam owns half the firm. They own the other half. They've been trying for years now to force Sam to sell his half of the partnership and leave the business. They haven't been successful.
Maybe that's so. But what difference does it make as far as my report goes?
The reason they want that report is because Sam Jenkins is married. His wife is a very jealous woman. If you turn that report into them, they'll take it to his wife, or perhaps they'll threaten to, unless Sam sells out.
I don't handle divorce cases.
Well, Griffith and Swenson must have known that. That's why they told you the story they did.
You can prove this?
It's true, but how can a thing like that be proved?
Good night, Miss Walters.
You're going to send the report in?
So far tonight, 2 people have tried to stop me from reporting on Jenkins. Yourself and...
Myself and who?
He didn't give his name, but he was a large man. Maybe 6'2", broad-shouldered, dark-skinned, light eyes, gray maybe, or blue. He wore... Miss Walters. She fainted. It was a genuine faint. She hit the floor solidly. I tried to get her out of it by shaking her a bit, but it didn't work. A little first aid would be necessary. I'd need water. It was a fairly large house. I had a little trouble finding the kitchen. Finally, I found him. I found something else, too, though. Sam Jenkins. But a Sam Jenkins who wouldn't walk through any more doorways because he'd walked through the last one into death. Here. Try drinking some of this.
What? Oh. Thank you.
Feel better?
I suppose so. I guess I fainted, didn't I?
You fainted. Here, let me help you up.
Oh.
Hey, better grab a chair.
Yeah. That was very silly of me.
What's his name, the boy with the broad shoulders?
You mean Baldwin? Oh, you tricked me into answering that.
Is there any reason why I shouldn't know his name?
It doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Maybe you're right. I got the water you've been drinking in the kitchen.
From everything I hear, that's an awfully good place to get water.
I ran into something while I was there. Something I hadn't expected.
Are you going to complain about my housekeeping?
Maybe. I don't think you tidied up as well as you might have.
You're embarrassing me.
I think you're the one who ought to call the police, Miss Wallace. They might give you a better break if you did.
Call the police? About domestic untidiness?
Yeah. When that untidiness includes a corpse. I'm not very good at being subtle about things.
What are you trying to say?
I told you I was in your kitchen. Someone else was there, too. Someone who's going to stay there until he's carried away.
Sam?
Sam Jenkins, yes.
You must be mistaken.
There are a lot of things I could be mistaken about, but they don't include corpses.
I don't understand how
he... He was stabbed. I didn't touch the knife, but from what I could see of it, it came from someone's kitchen. I'd say the odds were that it came from yours. She didn't faint again. She just turned white. After a while, she had a look at what was lying on our kitchen floor. Maybe she'd seen the body before, maybe not. She managed to make her phone call, and the police arrived. I wasn't there to greet them, though, because I'd managed to persuade her to furnish me with Mr. Baldwin's first name. It was Frank. She didn't know, or at least she said she didn't know, his address. I went back to my original employer to make my report in person.
What is it?
Barry Craig, Mr. Griffith.
Just a moment. What on earth do
you... You've got neighbors. I don't think they'd be interested.
I'm sorry. Come in.
Thank you.
I presume you have something to report, Craig, but isn't your zeal a little excessive? It's 1 a.m.
I know it's 1 a.m.
And I can't imagine anything being so urgent that it requires waking me at this hour.
How about murder?
Are you drunk?
No.
Who was murdered?
Your former associate, Sam Jenkins.
Now, that's impossible.
Why? Did you think he was immortal?
No, of course not, but... This is quite a shock to me, Craig. Mind if I sit down?
Not at all. I don't understand why it's such a shock, though. You wanted to get rid of him.
I don't like the way you put that. Swenson and I were convinced he was selling the firm out. Therefore, we decided to take steps about it, but...
Steps short of murder?
Would we have employed you if violence was our intention?
That's a point. It's probably even a good one. But before I give you the rest of the report, who's Frank Baldwin?
Frank? Oh, yes, well, he was a rather well-known football player at one time. I think he was engaged to marry Lynn Walters. Nothing ever happened. Since then, he's been around. So far as I know, he hasn't earned an honest dollar since he left school.
He's grown a lot, though. Sam Jenkins was found dead in the kitchen of Lynn Walters' home.
Lynn Walters' home? Then he was seeing her.
Your ideas about that seem to have been correct. However, I'd like a little reassurance on one point.
What's that?
According to Lynn Walters, the reason you wanted him followed to her place, the reason you wanted me to turn in an official report to that effect, was because Jenkins' wife is insanely jealous. Again, according to Miss Walters, you were to use that report as a club over Jenkins' head to force him into leaving the firm.
Well, this is complete nonsense.
Okay. Now, since Jenkins is dead, I don't suppose that there's any further reason you'd want me to stay on in your employ, is there?
I suppose not. We'll send you a check in the morning.
Fine. And that, of course, means you're not my client anymore, Mr. Griffith.
Yes, I suppose that's correct.
I think it's fine, because now I can tell you that you're a liar. I didn't slam the door behind me, but I left. I didn't report to Swenson either. Griffith would take care of that. I went looking for a man named Frank Baldwin, who hadn't earned an honest dollar for years. A man who at one time had been engaged to Lynn Walters and might still be in love with her. A man who had known that the front door of her house was being watched, and who might have checked on the back door, the one that led to the kitchen. Hello, Baldwin.
Oh. Oh. Number 6 ball in the side pocket.
Hey, that was a nice shot.
Thanks.
Also proves you've got nerves of steel.
Look, run away. You annoy me.
I'm just beginning to annoy you, Baldwin. Don't you want to know how I found out your name?
I'm not interested.
You should be. When old girlfriends start talking about a man...
What old girlfriend?
Lynn Wallace.
She told you my name? Lynn wouldn't have done that.
Maybe not, under ordinary circumstances. But a girl who suddenly discovers herself to be supplied with a corpse in the kitchen is likely to lose her head.
What are you trying to give me?
A bad time. How am I doing?
You still got that gun?
I've got it, but it's in my pocket now. I'm not working, you might say.
Let's go for a walk, huh?
Sure. Oh, leave your cue stick here, though.
Ah, oh, I'm terribly absent-minded. Come on.
Kind of late, isn't it?
Depends on the hours you keep. Listen, I gotta know. You said something about a corpse in Lynn's kitchen. Who was it?
Who do you think?
I'm not thinking, I'm asking.
Okay, don't get excited. It's no secret by this time. Sam Jenkins.
You sure of that?
I saw him.
There's something wrong.
Because there was a corpse, you mean? Or because it was the wrong corpse?
I don't think we're going to carry this conversation on any further. I got to go pay a couple of visits.
Okay. But before you do, Baldwin...
Yeah?
Have you got any reason to worry about a parked car down the block a bit?
A parked car? Why should I worry about it?
I don't know, but the motor is idling. The lights are off. Could be waiting for somebody. Maybe you, maybe me.
You're just wasting time. My time. So long.
So long. Baldwin! Baldwin! He could be paged from now to doomsday, Mr. Baldwin, but he wouldn't answer. Mr. Baldwin hadn't known it, but he had a lot to worry about. Now he had no more worries. A half dozen bullets had cut him almost in half.
Barry.
Yes, Lieutenant Rogers.
You think you could spot the car if you saw it again?
Well, in view of the fact that they make 100,000 like it every year in Detroit, I might have a little trouble.
They wouldn't have been using their own license plates.
Professionals never do.
Barry, does this tie up with the Jenkins killing?
Of course it does.
We didn't hold the Wallers, girl. Maybe we should have.
Did you have any good reasons to?
One advantage of being a policeman is you don't always have to have a good reason, at least not for a while.
You mean Lynn Walters could have arranged to have Mr. Baldwin knocked off?
I mean she could have done it herself.
Oh, it's a possibility, but I don't think so.
Well, maybe we didn't have evidence that she killed Jenkins, Barry. We don't have evidence that she didn't, either.
How long ago did you release the girl?
An hour ago, maybe.
Well, that's too bad. She would have had enough time. Have you got any men on her at the house?
Plain clothes men out in front.
There's also a back door.
I know that, but I didn't expect this.
Neither did Baldwin. You won't need me now, will you?
What good would it do me if I said yes?
Thanks, Trav. I'm going to visit Lynn Walters.
In the spirit of good, clean fun?
Not exactly.
Preventive medicine?
Not that either. I think maybe I might acquire a new client.
Oh, Mr. Craig.
Mr. Craig, mind if I come in?
I guess not. After tonight, I very much doubt I'll ever mind anything again.
You'll get over it. That is, if you haven't been going around killing people.
I didn't kill Sam. Wait, you said people. Does that mean...
Yes. It means someone else has been killed, too. I hope it comes as a surprise to you.
Well, of course it does. I don't even know who... Who was it?
Judging from all indications, Sam Jenkins was a boyfriend of yours.
He was a friend.
All right, we'll accept that version for the time being. You had another friend at one time.
Frank Baldwin?
Yes. This doesn't seem to be a very good season for friends of yours.
You mean it was Frank who died?
Let's not be delicate. I mean it was Frank who was murdered.
I suppose I should react more strongly to that. I can't. I'm completely numb.
If that's the truth, I think you ought to hire yourself a detective. You're going to need one.
Why?
Sam Jenkins was killed in your house at a time when you could have been alone with him. Frank Baldwin could have been killed by anyone. Perhaps it's only a coincidence that he died on the same night that Sam Jenkins did. The district attorney is likely to start brooding about that and decide it isn't a coincidence at all.
I can't pretend I don't understand what you're saying. I can't pretend that I care very much either.
Were you in love with Jenkins?
I've already told you he was a friend, a good friend, but nothing more.
In that case, tomorrow morning we'll find you feeling a lot different. Hire me for tomorrow morning, huh?
Well, all right. But why are you so insistent? You need the work?
No, but I've been used in this thing. I don't like being used. I need the standing that having you as my client would give me. Let's say the fee will be $1 per day, no expenses.
That's very cheap.
I don't think it's going to take very long. Now tell me that you didn't kill Jenkins and Baldwin again, please.
I didn't kill Sam Jenkins. I didn't kill Frank Baldwin.
Thanks. You know what the funny part of it is?
What?
99 people out of 100 would be sure that you're lying. I think you're telling the truth. I left. I had a couple of calls to make. I didn't think either of them would take very long. At the salary I was working for, I couldn't afford to let them. Mr. Griffith wasn't at home. It was kind of late for a dignified gentleman like Griffith to be abroad, especially in view of the fuss he'd made when I waked him earlier. Then I thought that perhaps tender solicitude had touched his heart. Perhaps he had gone to console Sam Jenkins' widow. I decided I'd go help him.
Who's there?
The name is Craig, Mrs. Jenkins.
What do you want?
Among other things, I don't want to be shouting through a shut door.
I'm sorry, but it's really quite late.
You're still up.
I don't think that's of any particular concern of yours.
It is. I'm looking for Mr. Griffith.
He's not here.
Sure he's here. His car is parked out front.
Oh, I guess you'd better come in.
Thank you.
Who is that?
Oh, hello, Mr. Griffith.
Anne, why did you...
I saw your car parked in front.
I didn't take my car. I used a taxi. Never mind. Very clever, Craig.
Thanks.
I don't know exactly what you had in mind coming here. You're not employed by me anymore, you know.
I know.
Therefore, you're off the case, and...
Sorry, I'm not off the case. I've just changed employers.
What are you talking about?
To be precise and personal, I'm talking about Lynn Walters.
Miss Walters hired you?
At my suggestion, she did. She got a bargain.
Now, what did she hire you to do?
To make sure that she doesn't wind up taking the rap for two murders, Mr. Griffith.
Oh, yes? Are you sure that she didn't commit them?
Of course I'm sure.
Why?
She told me she didn't.
Now, this is ridiculous. I suggest you get out of here immediately, Craig.
Before you call the police?
That's right. If you persist in annoying Mrs. Jenkins and myself...
The trouble is, Mr. Griffith, I'm afraid I'm going to have to annoy you a lot more before I leave.
Tom, I can't take much more of this after Sam's death and all.
Mrs. Jenkins... I don't like to intrude on a lady's grief, but I'm afraid I'll have to. You see, immediately after I terminated my employment with Mr. Griffith, I called him a liar.
I don't care what...
You'd better. Griffith and Swenson hired me to find proof against your husband. Proof that he was betraying professional secrets to a competitive firm. I watched your husband for a while and found that he went nowhere near any such competitor. I did discover, however, that he was paying visits to Lynn Walters. When I reported this to Mr. Griffith, he was delighted. He wanted me to make a final check and turn in a report. Lynn Walters is not a business firm.
Very well, so she isn't. I fail to see why you have to tell us all this.
I didn't discover until I was already on the case that this was a matter of domestic relations and possibly divorce. So far as Lynn Walters knew, she thought that my report would be used to blackmail Sam Jenkins into quitting the firm and giving up his interest in it. But since I find Mr. Griffith here, it becomes obvious that that report was to be used in divorce proceedings. Presumably, the idea was to get rid of Jenkins, not only from the firm, but from your life as well.
Tom, you do something about this man.
Now, look here, Craig. Even if what you say should be true...
Thanks for telling me that it is. We come to something else. While I was watching outside Lynn Waller's house, a man named Frank Baldwin came along and made an effort to get me to leave. I didn't budge. Frank Baldwin himself left.
Well, that's of no interest.
You keep saying that. Why? Because all this is important?
I fail to see what can be important about it.
Just this. His effort to make me move was intentionally weak. He didn't intend to succeed. Furthermore, he knew who I was, which meant that he had been hired to annoy me, but not to move me from my position. Hired by someone who knew that I was being employed to watch Sam Jenkins. The purpose of his approaching me was to make me think that it was Lynn Walters. But Lynn Walters didn't know that Jenkins was being followed. Neither did Jenkins. I know my business well enough to be sure of that.
Are you implying that I hired this man Baldwin?
I'm implying that the murder of Sam Jenkins and Frank Baldwin hired him.
Why, all this is nonsense. If Baldwin had been hired by the murderer of Sam Jenkins, why did that murderer kill Baldwin, too?
For a simple reason, safety. Whoever did the murders was someone who wanted to be very sure of things. Someone who didn't trust legal processes and divorce courts. Someone who didn't trust the hired allegiance of a thug like Baldwin.
I thought you were an honest fool, Craig. I'm beginning to think now that you're not a fool, and perhaps not honest.
That's why you're waving that gun at me?
Yes, I just want to be sure.
The murderer wanted to be sure, too. But how sure is she? How sure can she ever be?
You mean Lynn Walters did kill Sam?
Lynn Walters isn't the only woman in the case.
Tom, did you hear what he said?
Why, the man's raving.
When Baldwin was gunned down, I was within 100 feet of him. He didn't die immediately. Before he did, he had a chance to tell me who had hired him to serve as a red herring. Who had hired him to keep me pinned out in front of the house while she was killing her husband in back.
No man could have lived to tell you that with half a dozen bullets in him.
How did you know how many bullets he had in him, Mrs. Jenkins, unless you'd shot him yourself? Mr. Griffith, I suggest that you have just captured a dangerous murderer. Keep that revolver on her until the police get here, and, my congratulations. I wasn't particularly happy about the case. I never am when it's a question of murder. No matter how well justice may be served, people have died. Sometimes unnecessarily and always violently. I felt depressed. I wondered if Lynn Walters felt depressed, too. I decided to go visit her and match depressions. Funny thing, as soon as I decided to do that, I began to feel a lot less depressed. I wonder why.
You've been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Kitchens Come with Knives, was written by Lou Vittis. Next week, it's the strange story titled Corpse with a Pedigree, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
Next week, a professor who marries a shimmy dancer loses face generally, and his life particularly. When a trio of pedigreed heirs find that they have only homicide in common. Good night, folks. See you next week.
Coleman, America's leader in modern automatic home heating equipment, and the National Broadcasting Company have brought you William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Featured in the role of Lynn was Barbara Weeks. Don Pardo speaking. Every 20 seconds through the year, a fire breaks out in the United States. These fires kill 11,000 persons each year and destroy $7 million worth of property. Protect your home from fire by following these simple safety precautions. Don't smoke in bed or throw away lighted cigarettes. Clean out closets, attics, basements. Repair defective electric equipment and replace worn or frayed wiring. Fires in the home, your home, can and must be prevented.
Tonight, listen to Dragnet on NBC.
copyrighted program created by the Rio Grande Oil Company.
San Diego police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Broadcast 154. Go to the Prescott Hotel and investigate the report of a murder. The body of a woman is found in a room. That's all.
Biggest users of gasoline, the city and county purchasing departments make scientific tests before they specify a gasoline for use in their great fleets of emergency equipment. Four main questions must be answered.
Which gasoline starts quickest?
Which accelerates fastest?
Which delivers most power?
Which is most economical to you?
On this basis, Rio Grande cracked gasoline has repeatedly won against all competition in Los Angeles, Oakland, Fresno, Santa Barbara, San Diego, Maricopa, the largest county in Arizona, and in many, many other cities and counties throughout this territory. This success is due primarily to the Sinclair cracking process. From one of the world's most modern refineries comes this balanced gasoline. Rio Grande cracked with tetraethyl. First,
quick stopping.
Second, fast acceleration.
Third,
surging power.
Fourth, mileage.
These are the factors that cause Rio Grande cracked gasoline to be used exclusively in so many, many police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment. These are the factors that give police car performance. Try Rio Grande cracked gasoline in your car. Do this tomorrow. And now it is our pleasure to present W.A. Huggins, Secretary to Chief of Police Sears, San Diego. Mr. Huggins.
Good evening. San Diego Police Department has had many strange murders to solve, but the case of the girl in room 9 was one of the most incredible cases to be found in our file. Detectives investigating the circumstances surrounding it found themselves literally face to face with a blank wall. There seemed to be no clues to go on, no reason for anyone to have committed the crime. And yet, there was the brutally beaten body of a woman lying in the morgue to spur them on in the hunt for the killer. A hunt which led them from one end of San Diego to the other and back again before they finally got a lead to the murderer's identity and managed to arrest him. But as you will see, despite the many difficulties they encountered, despite the lack of clues, in the end, the killer was brought to justice, which once again goes to show that when a person resorts to murder, no matter how careful they may be, the chances that they will get away with it are less than 1 in 100.
San Diego, May 15th, 1918. The year that is to write Venus to one of history's bloodiest chapters, the war to make America safe for democracy. From every state west of the Mississippi River, a solid line of men pour into the training camps, the good and the bad, the rich and the poor, all reduced to one common denominator in the final desperate drive to meet war's demand. More men, more arms. It is a few minutes after midnight when two sailors from the USS Vicksburg, on shore leave, amble erratically up the street, come to a swaying stop in front of a little transient hotel where they have rooms for the night.
Steady, George, me boy. You're rolling in your own weight.
I'm doing nothing of the sort. You're the one that's doing the rolling.
I'm rolling. Listen, sailor, I practically carried you out of that joint we were in. You must have been planning on drinking the police dry.
Yeah, I would have, too, if you hadn't got so drunk I had to take you home. What do you think of that, huh? What do you think of that?
I think maybe we better go in the hotel before we get thrown in the brig. That's what I think.
That's a good idea. Come on.
Listen, sailor, I said this way. What are you trying to do, start an argument?
Sure, anytime. Hi,
Hubbard. Oh, come on, George. You can't even see where you're going. I'll take you right to our room. Now, come on, stop yet.
You don't want to fight, huh? You got cold feet.
All I want to do is to get you out of this hall before the landlady throws us both out. Come on. These stairs. Easy. That's the spirit. One at a time. One at a time.
Don't tell me how to walk upstairs. I was walking upstairs before you were born at Donham, too.
Sure, I know all about it. Easy. That's it. One at a time.
One at a time. One at a time. You sound like a gramophone record that got stuck in a groove. One at a time. One at a time.
Shh. You want to wake the whole hotel? Come on. Here we are. Room 8.
Oh, no. Room 9's the one we're in.
Now, listen, George. What do you want to be so stubborn for? I know what room we're in, and it's 8.
9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9.
All right, but shut up.
It's room 9.
Sure, room 9, but shut up. Here we are. Now, see if you can stand up till I get the door open.
Sure, I can stand up. Why wouldn't I be able to stand up?
Quiet. There. Come on.
I'll turn on the light. I can't see in the dark. Only owls can see in the dark.
All right, wait a minute. There's your lights. Hey.
What's the matter?
George, look on the floor.
Oh, what's the matter with the floor? I don't see... Oh.
A woman.
What's she doing in our room?
Listen, George, snap out of it. This woman's dead.
Dead?
Yeah. Look at her throat. Somebody's murdered her.
Murdered? Let me see.
Look at those finger marks on her neck. Looks like she'd been strangled.
Yeah. Hey, look, Al, what are we going to do? We got to let someone know. Maybe they'll think we did it.
That's why you got to sober up fast.
Well, don't worry. I'm sober right now.
Then come on. We got to report this to the landlady.
Shocked into instant sobriety by the horror of their discovery, the two sailors rushed down the hall to the landlady's room and tell her about it. And in less than 20 minutes, Chief of Detectives Joseph Myers arrives at the hotel where he is met by Officer O.U. Martin. Together, the two men look at the bruised and beaten body and then question the landlady.
What is your name, ma'am?
Anna Johnson.
Anna Johnson, eh?
Yeah.
Well, tell me, Mrs. Johnson, just what happened this morning?
Well, I was asleep in my room. Room 12, it is. And a little after 12, I was waked up by someone pounding on the door. When I opened, there was two sailor fellows there. They told me there was a dead woman in their room.
And what did you do?
Well, I got up and put the robe on. Then we went to the room, and I saw it was Clara, and she was badly hurt, so I called the police.
Well, do you know of anyone who might have wanted to do this to Clara?
Oh, no, I know of no one. She was so sweet, like a sister.
Sorry, Mrs. Johnson, deeply sorry.
Thank you.
How long has she been employed here?
Several months.
Married?
I believe she was. But she was separated from her husband.
Anything happened last night that might throw some light on this?
Nothing that I know of. I came home from a show, and Clara had company. A girlfriend and her sweetheart. Oh, they were good friends of Clara's.
No chance of their doing this, eh?
Oh, no. They were her best friends.
Well, what happened then, Mrs. Johnson?
Well, they went home about 10 o'clock, and Clara and I had a little food to eat, and I went to bed. Clara came to my room because I had a headache and she brought me some aspirin. Then she left for her room and I went to sleep. The first thing I remember after that was the sailor boys waking me.
And that's all you can remember?
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Mrs. Johnson. Don't let anybody touch that body, Sergeant. I'm going down to talk to those sailors.
In the small lobby of the hotel, Myers questions the two sailors. Satisfies himself that they have no connection with the murder. A close check on the rest of the hotel guests brings no clue, and Chief Myers turns his attention to the hotel register. Suddenly, his eyes come across one name that bears no address after it. It is written on the page dated May 14th, 1918, and shows the room number to be 7. With this slim lead, he returns to room 12 and once again questions Mrs. Johnson.
Mrs. Johnson, there's something here that doesn't quite jibe with what my men have found. I thought you might be able to help.
What's that?
This name on the register. Jack Cree, as near as I can make it out. Who is he?
Jack Cree? Jack? Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember now. He was a soldier.
He stayed here last night?
Yeah. He came in early in the evening before I went to the show. I rented the room.
Room 7, is that right?
Yeah.
The boys looked that room over, Chief. The bed hadn't been slept in.
Any sign of him?
No, sir.
Then I'll stake my bottom dollar. He's the lad we want. Look, Martin, get a description of him from Mrs. Johnson and any other information you can get. I'm going to call the office and get Stevens over here to run this down.
telephone call to the police station results in the arrival a short time later of Detective H.C. Stevens, who, after learning all he can from Chief Myers, takes charge of the investigation. His first move is to re-question Mrs. Johnson.
There's very little doubt in my mind about this Cree fellow's having done the job. The trouble is, who is he and where is he? You've got to help us in answering those questions, Mrs. Johnson.
All right. I guess I will have to tell you then. But I had hoped this wouldn't be necessary.
What do you mean by that?
This soldier, the one you was asking about, he did something that I didn't want to tell. He followed me into my room last evening after I had showed him his. He began to act terribly. He tried to make love to me.
What did you do?
I told him he couldn't behave that way in this hotel and forced him to leave. He called me a dreadful name as he went down the stairs. A terrible name.
Was the last time you saw him?
Yes.
Martin, Chief Myers told me you have a description of the man, is that right?
Yes, sir. I just got it from Mrs. Johnson. Here you are.
Approximately 33 years old, dark complexion, 5'7" tall. Not much to go on with about 100,000 men in uniform in San Diego alone.
Pretty slim.
What about this girl that was killed? She ever had any trouble with any soldiers or sailors, Mrs. Johnson?
Yeah. Once she did. A few weeks ago, 4 soldiers from Camp Carney was here, and they accused her of having stolen $40 from their room. But the military police who came to investigate told me later that the soldiers had lied to the salt.
I see. Thanks a lot, Mrs. Johnson.
Yeah?
Guess there's nothing more we can do here for the time being. Keep an eye on things, Martin, while I do a little canvassing of the neighborhood hotels. Pretty thin lead, but this Cree fellow might have stayed somewhere around here after he got through his dirty work. We're following up anyway. I'll be back later.
So Detective Stevens begins a tour that takes him from one small hotel to another, up one street, down the next. And finally, as he is just about to give up, he enters the 12th place, the Aspen House on 5th Street, and for the 12th time, asks the same question.
Did you have anyone come in early this morning and ask for a room?
Is this in connection with the murder over at the Prescott?
Yes, it is.
Well, there was a fellow came in about 5:30. He was plenty drunk and he acted sort of nervous-like.
Yes?
I told him the room would be $1 and he forked it over without saying a word. But he refused to register.
Used to register, eh?
Yes, sir, and that's not all. I got a look at his hands and they were scratched. There was blood on them, so help me.
Go on.
I thought to myself when I seen them that they looked like fingernail scratches. But it wasn't none of my business, so I didn't say anything. Anyway, he left a call for 8 this morning. And when I went up and woke him, he jumped up and stared at me for a minute. And then he slammed the door in my face.
Is he here now?
No, sir. He left about 20 minutes ago. It was an awful hurry.
What'd he look like?
Well, he was about 35, 5'10", I'd say. Weighed about 170, black hair, gray around the temples, and wore a dark suit with a box coat and a black fedora hat. I figured he was a gambler by his look.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Hey, where are you going?
I'm going to get that description to every policeman in San Diego.
Thus, the first real clue of any importance, and the start of a sweeping dragnet of San Diego. Police bulletins describing the mysterious Jack Cree are issued to every man in the San Diego Police Department, to all bus and train station officials, with orders to arrest and hold if located. And while every available officer in the city looks for the fugitive, Detective Stevens pays a visit to the 4 soldiers who had claimed the murdered woman had robbed them. And though he exhausts one clue when he finds their alibi perfect, he stumbles on to another that sends him to the naval training camp at Balboa Park, where he interrogates one of the sailors.
I understand that you're a friend of Ed Bowles, is that right?
Yeah, I know him.
How well?
Well, we went around together a good bit. Guess I know him as well as anyone.
Well, tell me something. How did he and Clara Minor get along?
Hmm? What do you mean?
Do you ever have any trouble?
Well, I...
Here, have a cigarette.
Oh, thanks, I will.
All right. Keep the pack. Any more where they came from?
Oh, thanks. Cigarettes are pretty scarce out here these days.
Yeah, I figure they were. What about Ed and Clara? How'd they get along?
Well, they had a little trouble. You know how it goes, another woman and all that. Ed was engaged to Clara, but he sort of fell for this Mary Bedford. Yeah, it's quite a mess.
Well, what happened?
Well, this Bedford woman got jealous of Clara and tried to commit suicide. And then when it didn't work, she told Ed he'd better watch his step or she'd make a good job of it next time and kill both of them.
I see. You know where this Bedford woman lives?
Yeah, I'm afraid I've talked too much right now.
Oh, wait a minute. You don't want to shield a murderer, do you?
Well, of course not.
What are you talking about? Talking too much already?
I guess I didn't realize what I was saying.
That's the ticket. Where does she live?
Over at the Hotel Dinsmore. You know, it's in the same block as the Prescott.
Yeah. An odd coincidence, isn't it? Bolus would like to get rid of Clara because she was an obstacle. Mary Bedford would like to do the same because she hated Clara. She lives in the same block Clara was murdered in. I'd say quite a coincidence.
Questioning of both Mary Bedford and Ed Bolus leaves Detective Stevens with a great many doubts as to their alibis. But not wanting to make any direct accusations until he has proof, he has them both held in technical custody as witnesses and then proceeds to run down the many other loose threads of the case. And as each day goes by, it leaves him with some new development. He learns that the janitor of the hotel, a man with a past record, has been missing since the morning of the murder. And immediately word is flashed over the police communication system to be on the lookout for him. Several men are paraded before the landlord of the Aspen House and promptly released when he fails to recognize any of them. The murder of Clara Minor begins to assume the aspect of a huge cobweb, each clue stretching out like one of the web's infinitesimal strands. And at last, with hundreds of leads to run down, each one vitally important to his case, Detective Stevens talks to his superior, Detective Inspector Paul J. Hayes, and requests another man to assist him.
I'd like to be able to do it, Henry. You know that without my saying it. But we're up against the wall for men. All the boys are out on jobs.
Isn't there just one you could get away from some other job and let me have?
Not a chance. As a matter of fact, I just assigned the last one I had to the club, a robbery deal. You know, the one two sailors robbed and beat him the other night?
Yes.
I've got plenty of trouble over that. Every citizen in San Diego is on our necks to get the ones who did it.
Well, I guess that settles that, huh?
I'm afraid so, Henry. I know what a tough nut you have to crack. But it's all yours.
All right, Inspector. Thanks anyway. If you come out all right with your clobber deal.
Thanks. If I don't, I'm liable to be looking for a new job. At least I will if the citizens of San Diego have anything to say about it. Now, beat it before you think of something else you want.
Right. Good night, sir.
So, Henry Stevens carries on his investigation alone. One by one, he eliminates his leads. Patiently, he wades through the mass of information he has gathered, checking this item, throwing away that item. And when he has checked every known point against the other, he finds himself with at least three possible suspects. Edgar Bolus, the ex-convict janitor, and the mysterious missing soldier, Jack Cree. Follows days upon endless days spent in training camps, in saloons, in hundreds of dives where soldiers and sailors meet to drown out the cares of the day with women and alcohol. Always the same question foremost in his mind.
Pardon me, buddy, but you know of a Jack Cree in this outfit?
Jack Cree? I never heard of him. Where's he from?
Never mind. Doesn't matter where he's from. Oh, Steve. Steve, you happen to know of a soldier by the name of Jack Cree?
Nah. I make it a habit not to know soldiers' names. Sailors neither, for that matter. As soon as they get to know you too well, they start asking for drinks on the cuff. It ain't good business.
Looking for a man by the name of Cree, Lieutenant. Jack Cree. You happen to have one in your outfit for that name?
Sorry. There's no one by the name of Cree in the 40th Division. Was there anything else?
No. Thanks anyway. I hadn't figured there would be.
So it goes, day after day, night after night, and still no sign of the missing man. Days drag on into weeks, weeks into months. The Clara Minor case fades from the front page of the paper. The outraged citizenry of San Diego gradually forgets that there ever was a girl named Clara Minor. Forgets that there ever was a clobber robbery case. But Detective Stevens remembers. Never does he slacken his vigilance for a moment. And time passes. February 1st, 1919. 9 long months since the brutal murder in Room 9. In the office of Captain Frank McGraw, the United States Intelligence Service, a captain of the guard stands. Two young soldiers from Camp Kearney in his custody.
Sergeant Kelly, sir, reporting with Privates Willis and Waterman.
All right, men, relax.
Thank you, sir.
So you're Willis and Waterman, eh? Tom Willis and Alan Waterman, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Well, men, we've caught up with you at last, and that's going to be pretty tough on both of you.
What do you mean by that, sir?
You know only too well what I mean, Waterman. That watch you men pawned has turned up in Oklahoma. And it was pawned there by a girl who was a sweetheart of one of the boys in the 21st. You're from the 21st, are you not?
Yes, sir, but I don't know nothing about no watch.
Well, how about you, Willis? Your memory any better than your buddy's?
No, sir. I don't know what you mean, sir. I never pawned a watch anywhere.
That's right. You didn't pawn it. But one of you gave it to a girl, and that girl made the break. Now, how about it?
You don't know nothing about it, Captain, and I don't know neither.
Afraid he might still, eh, Waterman? Well, I think you're right about that. I think he will spill when Detective Sears and Kelly get talking to him. Those boys have a way with them that usually gets results.
And a short time later, Detectives George Sears and Harry Keller join Captain McGraw in his office, where they're informed of the results of his questioning. Realizing that the younger man, Willis, is almost ready to talk, they have him brought in without water.
Sit down, Willis. I want to have a little talk with you.
Yes, sir.
You're pretty young, aren't you, Willis?
Yes, sir. I guess so.
About 16?
17, sir.
Young looking for his age, isn't he, Captain?
Yeah. Pretty nice looking, too, for a boy who'd go around robbing people.
You know, I don't think Willis planned that deal, Captain McGraw. I have a pretty good hunch that his pal took the whole thing up and got him mixed up in it. Now, how about that, Willis? Isn't that what really happened?
I don't know what deal you mean.
Why, sure you do. You remember old man Clopper, the fellow you and Waterman beat up and robbed? That's where you got the watch.
I didn't hit him.
Oh, Waterman did, huh? Now then, why don't you tell us all about it? Might just as well, you know. Might go a little easier on you if you came through.
I'm afraid of what Waterman would do.
Well, you needn't be. Detective Sears has enough on him right now to send him up for a nice long stretch, even if he never talks. So you can tell him anything you want to.
Is that right, Lieutenant Sears?
That's right, Wallace.
Then I'll talk. I'll tell you the whole thing. Waterman and I did do the job. But I didn't want there to be any violence. He told me we'd just stick a gun in the guy's ribs and take his money away from him. Honest, I didn't have anything to do with the beating end of it. I even tried to stop Ellen when he started hitting him.
So the young soldier, 17-year-old Willis, cracks under the skillful questioning of Detective Sears and Captain McGraw, blurts out the whole story while a stenographer takes it down in shorthand. And when he is finished, Detective Sears realizes that his long job is done. The Clobber robbery is solved. Then suddenly, as Willis is about to leave the room, he turns, looks back at the two men for an instant, and then...
Captain McGraw.
Yes, Willis?
There's something else I'd like to tell you, too. Something I've got to tell you.
All right. Start in.
Waterman killed that woman over at the Prescott Hotel. He came back to camp the next morning and told me so. He showed me his hands. They were all clawed up. I had to tell you, Captain. I couldn't hold it any longer. It was burning a hole inside of me. I had to tell you.
Convinced by the youth's sincerity that he's telling the truth, Detective Sears immediately phones Stevens, tells him to come out at once. And in less than 20 minutes, the police car screams to a grinding stop outside. Detective Henry Stevens rushes into the office.
Well, what's up?
Hello, Henry. I think we got the lad who killed Clara Mann.
What?
Yep. He and another lad are the two that pulled the clobber job. Just a few minutes ago, the younger one cracked and voluntarily told us that his partner, Waterman, had done the Prescott job.
Is Waterman here?
Right in the next room under guard.
Well, hang on until I get back. Listen, have a line of men with this Waterman among them, will you? I want a positive identification.
Rushing back to town, Stevens bundles the landlady, Anna Johnston, into the police car with him and heads back for the camp. Arriving there, they discover a full company standing at attention in the driveway. Asking Mrs. Johnson to follow him, he walks down the line of men. Halfway down the front rank.
There. There is the man.
How can you remember me after such a long
because
time?
Because you called me that horrible name. That's why. I could never forget you.
Well, Waterman, I guess that settles your future for a while. Come on, I've got a lot of things to ask you. I'm warning you right now, the answers had better be right.
But Alan Waterman refuses to talk. For hours, Stevens hurls questions at him, and the answer to each one is always the same. Waterman will not crack. Then Tom Willis is led in to stand face to face with his partner. Slowly, haltingly, fear staring out of his eyes, he repeats the story he has told McGraw and Sears. Then, suddenly...
All right, kid. And stop talking. I'll do the talking from now on. I killed that woman. I jumped at her as she passed the door to the room.
I beat her down, and then I strangled her. With these two hands, I strangled her. Just the same as I'd strangle anybody else who made insulting remarks about soldiers.
Go back to the room now, kid.
Thanks.
She said the soldiers was no good. So I decided to kill her. I waited out in the hall until she passed, and then I grabbed her. She didn't even have time to yell.
Is that your only reason for killing Clara Minor, Wadham?
Yeah, that's the only reason. She said what she did. I knew then that I'd have to kill her, and I did. I strangled her with my bare hands. And then I took a lace from my leggings and wound it around her throat till she stopped moving. No one can talk about soldiers that way and get away with it, because a soldier is the finest person in the world.
And now it is our pleasure to present District Attorney Thomas Whelan of San Diego. Mr. Whelan.
Alan Waterman was one of the strangest paradoxes in the history of my office. The almost unbelievable reason he gave for having brutally murdered Clara Minor led many to believe he was insane. At his trial, it was proved conclusively that although he was suffering from a form of hysteria, brought on, no doubt, by the uncertainty of the times and the World War, yet he was perfectly capable of thinking clearly. It was also proven by the prosecution that he had actually planned the murder in advance. On May 5, 1919, he was sentenced to San Quentin to serve from 10 years to life. His younger companion pled guilty to the Clobber robbery. And in the juvenile department of the Superior Court, he was sentenced to Preston Reformatory at Ione to remain until he reached his majority.
Thank you, Mr. Whelan. If Rio Grande cracked gasoline is so full of snap, so full of speed, so full of power, says the skeptical motorist, how can it also be so economical? Now, that's a fair question, and here's the answer. By the patented Sinclair cracking process, gasoline is so thoroughly broken up, that is, so thoroughly cracked, that every possible atom of energy is available for instant combustion. No unburned gasoline drips down your cylinder walls. No raw gasoline escapes through your exhaust. More of each gallon is turned into power. That's why Rio Grande cracked gasoline is more economical. And that is also why Rio Grande gasoline powers more police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment wherever it is sold than any other brand. Parallel in importance to the Sinclair cracking process for gasoline is the refining process used for Sinclair motor oils. Here it is a case of doing the same job as others, but doing it better. Sinclair Pennsylvania and Sinclair Opaline are thoroughly de-waxed and de-jellied. They flow more freely, stand up under harder abuse, and last longer. Therefore, they make your car last longer. Go to your nearest Rio Grande independent dealer tomorrow and try a crankcase full. And be sure to get a copy of the latest Calling All Cars news, thrilling detective stories, radio and movie news, and free gift news for the youngsters. All about the free junior detective and G-man outfits. How you can get a dozen different free gifts just by using a few gallons of Rio Grande cracked gasoline.
San Diego police calling all cars. Attention all cars. A cancellation broadcast 154. Suspect in this case now in San Quentin. That's all.
This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Barry Craig. Calling All Cars, Case Closed, and everything else, Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support Case Closed and all of the Relic Radio shows, give that button a click. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts if you're interested in those. Otherwise, any donation is always appreciated. It's how we keep coming every week. Thanks to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime on Case Closed.